got ourselves a show.
Just give me a minute. I gotta get the good vibes going. Sometimes people, I don't have the good vibes.
Do you want me to turn on the Christmas lights?
Christmas lights put me in a psychotic vibe.
Is that a good vibe for a show?
Rupert. See, that always makes me happy.
Rupert.
I got like four or five instrumentals that revolve around the word Rupert, and they're all really good.
Doop, 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 Rupert.
They all work for some reason. Because of you, because of your name. It's like
it's not a bad, it's a rhythmic name.
It is Rupert. A rhythmic name, yeah.
Rupert. 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 You shall rue the day you pret.
Rupert.
Rupert.
Anyways. I think we're ready to start the show. And welcome to another episode of Sounds from the 70s with Gary and Rob, sometimes known as Shuggy Touchettes.
Shuggy.
Coming to you from a studio in a hotel that is very reminiscent of the Overlook Hotel in the movie The Shining, and just as creepy. Don't you think?
I do. And they got the bad internet here too.
And nobody's here but us too, but yet there seems to be ghosts around. I thought I saw Jack Nicholson just yesterday, and he was writing something.
That winning smile of his.
Even though he looked like he had spent too many days at the Overlook Hotel. So on today's show, we are wrapping up our four-part look at glam rock in the 1970s with Rob, an artist that, as much as David Bowie, signified what glam rock was.
Maybe even more so.
Yeah, and a very good point, because really that was a lot of what the person that we were talking about, Mark Bolan and T-Rex, were about, whereas Bowie moved into other directions. T-Rex kind of stayed in that direction. And we are going to look at T-Rex's 1971 album, Electric Warrior. Now, before we officially start our show, because that's not officially starting.
That's just like we were testing the recording devices right here. And they work, and we're pleased, and we're just going to continue
actually,
making
noises. Actually, what I meant was we haven't got to any topics yet. We're just announcing what the show is going to be like. But it was a nice try. It really was.
I try.
Now, we have some real issues we'd like to talk about. Some serious issues.
Really?
Yes. Okay. Why, you think I'm lying?
Ah! God damn it.
What happened?
That bug that I so mercifully let live, he just crawled up my
Rob was scared by a bug.
Well, he's still alive. And he's still going.
Now, most shows, like the gardening show, would edit that out. But I want people to know that he just interrupted the show because of a bug.
And you think if it'd be an old wintertime at the Overlook Hotel here, there'd be no bugs. As it turns out, there's definitely one, and he's a big guy.
Okay.
And I thought I just squished him, but he is getting up, and he is walking away.
Okay, we are going to... I was talking about a real and serious issue before you...
Oh, yeah, we got some real and serious issues to get to tonight.
We are going to update you with a medical report about ourselves.
Medical report.
Now, some of our listeners may know I hurt my hand in band practice quite a while ago. Now, I don't know how long ago.
I'm going to guess about 6 weeks.
6 weeks now.
Ish.
And although it is not 100%, it's actually very close to that. It actually is, Rob. Except it still hurts sometimes. I actually think it's never going to go away. But I know it's going to go away. I know it's going to go away, but I think it's never going to go away.
It'll stop bothering you in 6 months.
Probably, yeah. So it's better, much better than it was even from the last show. But see, I can do stuff like that. You guys can't see that, but I'm doing stuff like that.
He's grasping an orange. There is no orange. I'm doing. It's an imaginary orange.
Very good. That's what I'm doing. Yeah, and so it's working out well, and it seems to take forever to heal. But you know what? When you get to a certain age, everything takes forever to heal. And yes, that is my philosophy.
Well, that age is certain.
What you said?
Make no mistake about it.
Oh. That's funny because every time I think you, when you talk, I think you're like
psychotic.
Yes.
That too.
Yes, but also coming at me. I think you're coming at me.
Another day for Rob.
Now Rob also has some medical problems. He was booked many moons ago. I've always wanted to say that many moons ago, because I think that's how they talked in the 1952.
They did.
Moons ago. In 1950s, that's all they used to say. Hey, John, how was your weekend many moons ago?
Not bad. We were drinking plenty of fire water. Yes.
Sometimes I get my decades and centuries mixed up. So anyways, Rob had some medical problems many moons ago. I love that I wrote that. That was very smart. To remove, this was a procedure to remove your useless left testicle. And is there any update on that, Rob?
I have the telephone number of a guy who does that sort of thing. And boy, it was quite a wrestling match getting that telephone number. Because I had to actually go to the clinic there.
I think you told
us. Remember when I said they were going to call me twice?
Yeah, they were.
Twice? Two times?
Well, first the doctor said, I know a guy.
He specializes in these sorts of things. He'd love to tackle this problem. Me, I don't. I know I'm a doctor. And traditionally what you're thinking is doctors do that kind of thing.
This makes me uncomfortable. I have to admit. I don't like this.
Jeez, I'm really... I got to golf tomorrow. He's going to throw my game off.
So I'm going to get in touch with my guy, and he's going to talk to you. And then it's been playing cat and mouse trying to get back to them, right?
Yeah, and he warned me there may be some bleeding.
Okay, we don't need that. We don't need bleeding from your testicle. People don't want to hear that on a show.
Well, I was hoping it would be bloodless. But removing a body part is rarely bloodless.
Trust me. When the day they arrest me for your murder, it will not be bloodless. There will be blood everywhere.
Mine? Yours too.
You know what I just noticed? And this is an inconsequential matter, but why is your microphone always so far away from you and mine's kind of close?
Because the nature of the tables.
Oh, I just thought because your voice had more of a
more boom.
Strong. It was more. It was a stronger voice.
I'm out of that low.
Yeah, radio. And you have that low thing, and it's amazing when we first did the show.
I was louder.
You were louder.
I was louder.
And you always had the microphones didn't work. We thought they worked, but let's just say the microphones worked. He always had his microphone far away, and he was always. Loud.
And there was nothing we could do to fix this or change it in any way because we didn't understand the problem.
The microphones weren't hooked up. But anyways, we're not going to talk about that. Now, Rob,
Speaking
of a useless testicle.
Okay.
How was your week?
Ooh, by golly. I was riding my bicycle about Thursday of last week and I'd had some problems. The back tire was kind of wobbly and... I think the bearings were going in it, and the chain had broken, and also the right gear cable.
That's fantastic stuff. I love hearing about your whatever you were talking about. Odds and ends.
Odds and ends.
Lost time is not found again.
Well, the point of the story was I got a new bicycle. Please continue.
That was so rude. That was so rude.
That was stunningly rude.
Now I got to start all over again. Odds and ends. Lost time is not found again. And this week on Odds and Ends, we just want to remind you for the last time. This is the last fucking time we're going to remind you, people.
So don't ask again.
About our fourth annual Christmas show, which will be on next week and throughout the holiday season. Because we're going to take 3 weeks off. And so you, just like every year when we take 3 weeks off for holidays, you're going to have to listen to that show over and over again, because that's the, well, no, there's all the other 100 million shows that we've done that you can listen to. But I say you should listen to this during Christmas, during the right before New Year's Eve, and right after New Year's Eve to remind you how good the show is.
Ooh. Listen to it four times.
Listen to it four
we
times.
We better make it a good one.
And we have secret messages in it. So if you can detect the three secret messages we have in our Christmas special, you win a t-shirt that says... I kissed Rob and I don't have any diseases. So
it won't be true, but you'll win one.
Our guests will be comedian and professional drunk, Foster Brooks.
Wish I could get a gig like that.
We need a professional drunk. Get that guy. Get that guy, Rob. And we will have, of course, Sexpot Charo, a Coochie Coochie.
Oh, yeah. She jiggles.
I don't know if we can call her a sex pot at like 82. But there are
maybe she's lost some of her jiggle.
Well, there are a lot of men who are into that sort of thing. So we're going to still call her a sex pot. And plus, that's all inner. It has nothing to do with the outer person. It's the outer person.
No, she has
a facade.
She has a charm which transcends the eyes.
And we will not have, you pissed me off with that for some reason, and we will not have celebrity impersonator Fred Travellina, as he feels we insulted him on last week's episode when we made fun of him being a topical impersonator, which is really, you know, he hasn't changed his act since 1978, so how fucking topical can you be?
Yeah.
And by the way, we're going to try not to use that type of language on our Christmas show, so we're going to get it out today.
And Santa wouldn't approve.
No.
You'd make Santa very sad.
We do not want to offer Mr. Travellina a sincere... Oh, yes, we do. We do, actually. I'm sorry.
We do.
We do want to offer Mr. Travellina a sincere screw you. We didn't really want him on the show anyways. We didn't. Rob even said... Why is he on the show? And I said, I think there's a mistake.
Mr. Travellina, screw you and Merry Christmas.
You know what? I remember somebody mentioned about booking him because we were just trying to be kind and give him some work over the holiday season. But now I guess he can find another way to pay for his kids' presents.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Heard he needs a job. Thought we were being kind.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden he gives us flack because we called him not a topical comedian with his imitations. Well, not imitations.
Yeah, like as if that's a bad thing.
I guess it is. not imitations, it's
impersonation.
Impersonation. Thank you, Rob. Also, Steve Lawrence's agent is still an asshat. Just like I said on last week's show.
So we know Steve Lawrence as well.
Steve is banned from Sounds
because
of
his agent, not because of himself.
And that's terrible.
Agent.
We like Steve Lawrence. We've met Steve Lawrence. He's a good man. But because of his asshat agent, because since we can't ban, obviously, his agent on the show, we have to ban Steve Lawrence.
Yeah, he wasn't going to be showing up anyway.
No.
Who invites their agent?
And today, we have... agent. But anyways, even though we've kind of cut down on our guests, we've had to cut down on our guests, we're going to have a good and festive time. It's just going to be, everybody's just going to have such a good time. It should be illegal. In fact, we might get arrested in the middle of the show, just like the Beatles when they tried to play on the rooftop. This would be like that, except it won't be anywhere near like that.
No, nothing near like that. Just we'll be arrested for jingling our bells tomorrow. Hey, stop jingling those bells.
Now,
it's Christmas.
I'm going to give you a little preview of what next week's show will like. Next week on the Christmas show, Rob will be reading his favorite passage from the Bible. and he will also be telling his own much-loved, beloved... Sorry, I made a mistake. He will also be telling his own... specially written, much beloved kid's Christmas tale. That's not what I asked for at all. Not even close. And of course, we will be reviewing a Christmas album and getting drunk, which is what we do every year. And things, people throw up, and then we have to clean it up.
The drunkenness.
The drunkenness.
Merry Christmas. Happy birthday, Jesus.
Hiccup. Happy birthday, Jesus.
You're a hell of a guy.
I like to sit and have a brew with you, if you know what I mean.
I remember once I thought I was walking on the beach, but you were carrying me. That was incredible.
I just spit up my old drink. Okay.
And you had a computer in front of you.
That was a great spit take, thanks to Rob. So you found out that Jesus is carrying you. I got water all over my computer because Rob made me laugh. I was not expecting that.
Usually I don't. Usually I aggravate you.
I wish we had this like we're going to do in the future.
With the camera coming.
With the camera. Because if you could have saw my spit take on that, it was classic.
That's kind of a thing that guys live for. Women, less so. But guys, they really appreciate it.
So remember, next week, tune in. It'll be on I think I'll put it on Tuesday. Not Tuesday. I never put it on Tuesday. Thursday.
Thursday
the 17th, whatever the hell Thursday is. I don't know what it is.
It's
you kids always want to know what the exact day is. You know what? You kids need to know how to get your life together.
Pick a month. Count to 17. There we are.
Okay. Yeah, we lost everybody to the garden show now. They're saying, doesn't these guys talk about 70s or music and they haven't talked about nothing like that?
We're going to talk about music. It's coming.
Right now. This week we are going to start a series which I'm not prepared for, but I'm going
to do. That's the best time to start them.
On the most pivotal years in rock and roll history. And no better place to start than the beginning. The beginning commercially, 1956. Now, 1956, every important year is debatable as far as compared to other years. But the beginning of it all has to be, to me, the most important one of all. So I consider 1956 the most important year of rock and roll because it could either catch on with the kids or it could not. And it not only caught on with the kids, but it became almost right away the most popular music. It became the pop music throughout North America for sure, and then gradually very soon in Europe. It didn't take long. The shockwaves of rock and roll were magnificent. Now, of course, everybody's saying, hey man, I know they're saying that right now. Hey man, why 1956 is the start of rock and roll? Weren't there records that were rock and roll before 1956? Yes, you incumbent geezer. Of course, there was Rocket 88 and songs like that. And Chuck Berry released his records in 1955. Of course, Elvis released his Sun records between 1954 and 56. But it didn't hit the mainstream until a young man from Tupelo, Mississippi went on TV, and it hit worldwide and as a phenomenon when he went on Ed Sullivan in September of 1956. But even in January, when he signed to RCA Records and left Sun, and then he made Heartbreak Hotel, that was really the beginning of making rock and roll mainstream, which just means it's like you could hear the songs before. You had Louis Jordan also making rhythm and blues records that were and Little Richard. But they weren't, they were selling to certain people and they weren't calling it really rock and roll, I don't think. And 1956 was really the year that it all became the music. It became rock and roll, and it became, at that year, the kids' music. And then I think by the end of the year, the most popular music, which happened very fast because there had never been anything like rock and roll. It was like, I can't imagine, because of course me and Rob weren't around. We weren't even close to being around in 1956.
We wasn't even a twinkle in our daddy's eye.
Yeah, I don't like that. Anyways, it must have been like punk rock in 1977. It just must have been. It was. I even watch it now, and I see clips, and I go, man, that's hardcore. For now, I mean, it's so raw and hardcore. I see Elvis on the first Ed Sullivan show, and I think it's one of the greatest rock and roll moments ever on TV. And he just goes, and he's got his band up there. He's got the Jordanaires as the singers, and he just rips into like Ready Teddy, and he goes, you know, he just rips into it and just gives it all he's got. He's dancing and he's playing his guitar, and then he stops and he's totally into the music. And but he's playing, it's he's like a magician. He's playing with the audience, but he's playing the music, and he's just, and he's also giving a big fuck you to everybody that doesn't like the music. And I've never seen anything like it. I've seen the Ed Sullivan show. I've seen all of Elvis's appearances in 56. I got them in like the early 90s to see them on the Dorsey show when he was really raw. And it was just, it was explosive. But when he did like Ready Teddy and Rip It Up on there, and it was just like, holy crap, it's still revolutionary to me. 70 years, 75 years later, it still to me is like, whoa, that's as punk as it gets. That's as anti-establishment as you get. I can't imagine anything before that. Like when you imagine Frank Sinatra and Tony Bennett and all those Andy Williams, all those guys, and then you go, and then it goes to Elvis. There's like no middle ground. It's like crooning. And then I have nothing against those. I actually like all types of music. And I love the crooners. And I love the American Songbook. But the difference between the American Songbook when they're singing in 1954 and 1956, it's like a giant leap. It's not like a little step across the water. It's like a giant leap. And all of a sudden, they're playing these drums and these guitars with reckless abandon, and the drums are loud. The drums are usually just an accompaniment. They're not that loud, but they're just, it's just an amazing, and it's all over. The rawness of early rock and roll, especially 1956 with Chuck Berry and his guitar up front and Johnny Johnson playing the piano.
Who could tell you you're doing something wrong because you're inventing it as you go along?
I know, there is no wrong. There is no rule book yet. There is no rule book. The only rule book was, I guess, just like everybody else's rule book, was that it's got to be about 2.5 minutes long at the most. That's about it. And get your message across, which really helped rock and roll when it started, because that meant you had to make it really fast if you wanted it to, because you could get your message across in like 1 minute and 45 seconds. And the quicker you did it and the faster it was, the more pissed off the establishment, because they're calling it like garbage. They're calling it like just noise. And it's amazing if you play, of course, a lot of music to the kids nowadays, and they go, it sounds so primitive, it sounds so, I don't know what, you know, I don't know
how I remember feel it. Growing up with the rockers getting mad at New Wave when it, I'm talking the 70s New Wave,
hearing. Unlike the 1962 New Wave.
Yeah, or the 1980s New Wave.
Everybody knows what New Wave you're talking, like the late 70s or the 80s
New Wave. Late 70s New Wave was different from 80s New Wave.
Okay, we've had this discussion before. Yeah. I'll just agree with you.
Yeah.
I've got other things to talk about, so I won't, even though you're wrong. No, even though you're right. No, you are right.
I'm 100%
I'm right. Not going in, but I usually categorize it as one because it is different, but it does.
But some of it's really good in the early days, and some of it really stinks later on.
I can't get more technical than that.
No, and why would you? That's all you need to know.
I don't know what your point was in the first place.
Oh, it's the older generation getting mad at the younger generation.
Yes, I mean, that's always been the
idea. I don't understand this. Like, this isn't music.
Like these rebel, almost punks that came out in 1956, Carl Perkins. I'm going to name right now the big ones. You got Carl Perkins. You've got a Little Richard. You've got Bo Diddley. Oh man, this array of stars is incredible. We got Elvis Presley. Please don't let me leave out anybody. We still haven't got to 57. 57 is when you got Jerry Lee Lewis.
When was Eddie Cochran? Was he later?
And Eddie Cochran, man, was 57.
Yeah, it was a bit later.
Yeah, 57 with Eddie Cochran and Gene Vincent in 56. You've got Buddy Holly in 57, even though he was making records, he was kind of making country records, didn't break till like 57. So you're talking about 56, 57, but we're not talking yet about 57.
57 hasn't happened.
It hasn't happened yet.
Just put that aside.
So a lot of people think, in fact, I think most people think all of these acts broke at the same time. Johnny Cash, another one. I love, my favorite box set of all time is the 5-CD box set I bought of his records from his songs from like 19, from the start of his career until like 1958. And it just blows me away every time because it's rocking. Plus, he has no drummer for most of it, which is just like Elvis did at the beginning at Sun Records when you just have an acoustic guitar and a stand-up bass and an electric guitar. How do you make aggressive rock and roll out of that? And they did. They were very smart. These were kids were very smart. And I hope I covered everybody, but everybody thinks everybody came in 1956 and they didn't. A lot of acts came in 57. Everly Brothers, I can't think, came in 56, I'm pretty sure. Don't quote me on that, but the Genesis started in 56. And the Genesis was really all about Elvis. And I'm going to say this right now, because I've said it before on this show, and Rob has agreed with me, I think.
He's going to keep saying it.
But I'm really pissed off at people saying, and they said this about that Elvis movie that came out by Baz Luhrmann about Elvis, and saying, oh, this, all that cultural appropriation that he did. Bullshit. You know what? Elvis was as big a fan as black music as there was, but he was also a big fan of Dean Martin. He was the biggest fan of Dean Martin. That was who he wanted to emulate. He was also a fan of country music. He was also a fan of Appalachian type of mountain music. He melded all of it together. So if you have to say that he appropriated everything, or if he appropriated black music or R&B music, which it wasn't called yet then, and blues music, then you have to say that he appropriated everything. And you know what happens when you appropriate everything? You create something new called rock and roll. And I will not have that idiotic talk.
But you're not allowed to appropriate anything. Anytime you're influenced by something you're appropriating, therefore you should never do it.
That's exactly
the point. Yeah, that's just insane.
And and Jerry Lee Lewis, we just lost, by the way, we just lost Jerry Lee Lewis. And I know he wasn't an extremely nice guy, but I looked up to him musically. I just thought that he's one of my favorite rockers of all time. And I know there's been a couple of articles already written about him, about the stuff. And you know what? If you had these articles about his terrible behavior when he was alive, have the guts to print it when he's alive. Because it's very easy to print a whole bunch of shitty stuff about somebody, and they're probably true. I don't know. Some of it is true, maybe all of it's true. I don't care. Print it while he's alive. Why do you have to sit there and wait till he's dead so that, you know, he can't talk about it anymore, or he can't rebuke it,
and he can't give an explanation? That's why you just named it.
So I find that disgusting. Even though it may be true, I think if you got something to say, say it when a person's alive. Don't wait until he's just died and then 2 days later say, you know what, I didn't like a lot of what Jerry Lee Lewis did, but his music was certainly great. So we should look up to him as a human, which I don't think we should. I don't think we look up to anybody as a human being, being a musician. But you got to look at the art, and the art was just fantastic. So you got Jerry Lee Lewis, and he took the gospel music that he was brought up with, and he incorporated that into rock and roll, into boogie woogie, and he got so many amalgamations that, and I understand that black people have been screwed over ever since they came to America. In Canada, we didn't have slaves, but anyways, we found that deplorable. But anyways. And I know there, it's a raw thing about, you know, the white man taking stuff away from the black people all through the
200 plus years. Yeah, but nothing was taken away. This was only adding to it.
This is just listening to something and liking it, and then adapting it to your own style and making your own. And like I said, most of these guys, Carl Perkins, they were mostly playing hillbilly music. And Bill Haley, like, what the fuck is your problem? Like, seriously, I understand that there's blues influences in rock and roll. Oh, there's like Fred amongst McDowell. Five or six other influences.
Didn't
like
he say blues gave birth to a baby and that baby was rock and roll?
Little Richard said that, and I understand it, but also blues had, if it was just blues, it would sound like the blues. If it was just rhythm and blues, it would sound like rhythm and blues, but it's not. It's a combination of many things. It's a combination of Elvis's background in country music, loved country music, and folk music from the Appalachian Mountains, and all that stuff, and gospel music, not just Black Baptist gospel music, but also, and I'm not trying to take away from Black music, I'm just saying it helped, just like everything else helped, to make rock and roll what it was. It was the white gospel music that was brought up in the Protestant white area. It's all that stuff. And it's just a big gumbo. That's what rock and roll is. Rock and roll is so great to me is because it takes from everything and makes it its own. It really does. And when rock and roll got more advanced, it took from classical music.
Yep.
And it used classical forms. And then it used jazz forms to form fusion music and other things. It has taken from everything and made it in its own kind of way. Sometimes for good, sometimes for bad. That's not for us to judge. It's just amazing that it's one of the only music forms that takes from other music forms and says, thank you so much, I listen to this. You don't have jazz players that much listening to rock and roll. It's amazing the amount of rock and roll musicians.
I don't hear a lot of jazz country.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I mean. And you especially don't hear a lot of jazz musicians like in the 50s and 60s and 70s going, except for Miles Davis, because he was like, whew. He would take from everything and he would make it his own. And he loved rock and roll and funk. But most of them, they were saying, oh, yeah, rock and roll's bullshit and whatever. You know what? Rock and roll musicians never, that's why I loved it so much, is that they would say, you know who I grew up on? I grew up on like Charles Mingus and listening to Miles Davis and then I would listen to country and
this, you know, that, and the other thing.
This, yeah. That, and the other thing. And they were so open. The musicians were so open to all this type of music. And whereas the other forms of music that people had listened to, they liked their form of music and screw everything else. And that's the biggest thing when rock and roll started in 1956 that happened, is that it made it okay to blend genres, which had never really happened in that kind of form before. Never. If you were a crooner, you crooned. If you sang jazz, it was a little bit of crooning, but mostly it was just saying jazz.
Well, yeah, all your styles had rules, and as much as rock and roll started out with some rules, they kind of broke down as the years went by, and
you almost had no rules.
You really had no rules. I mean, there was no rules. The great story is how one of the very first rock records ever with Elvis and Scotty and Bill in Sun Studios creating That's All Right, Mama. And Elvis had heard Arthur Big Boy Crudup do the blues version of That's All Right, Mama. They weren't even rolling. They were in between takes. They really weren't getting anything that was electrifying. So Elvis was kind of playing around, and he kind of was, you know, they were between takes. They were on a break. And Elvis just said, oh, I'd like to speed up. You know, I'd be just like we do, just like all musicians do. I wonder what this would sound if it was sped up. I wonder if this would sound if it was slowed down. And he just took kind of a bluesy, oh, it's all right now, mama, you know, bluesy. And then he said, well, that's all right, mama, mama, that's all right with me. That's all right, mama, anything you do, well, that's all. Well, that's rock and roll. And Sam Phillips heard it right away. And he heard it, and he says, I don't know what that is, but I've never heard it before, but let's do it. That is rock and roll. That's like, sure, it's based on a blues song, but it's not blues. It's you have to make up a word for it. And so they made up rock and roll. And that's That's what it is. And that's the big bang that happened in 56, is that the music they were playing hit the major public. And it never looked back. From that point on, it was like if you could hear the odd songs in 53, 54, 55, but you could ignore it as being race music by black people. It didn't matter. Or, you could hear Elvis and everybody thought Elvis was black in the beginning anyways before they saw him. But now you couldn't ignore it because you had your linchpin. You had Elvis, who looked the way he did and, incredibly handsome. Also was very, congenial. Like, yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. And he wasn't this.
He was raised properly.
But he would also go nuts when he performed. And he also, would chew gum when he performed. I remember watching him on Ed Sullivan chewing gum as he performed, kind of like, I'm a punk too, And I don't mean the punk rock, but kind of like what the punk meant in the 50s, which was kind of like against the establishment. Kind of like,
wearing dungarees and chewing gum. Yeah,
exactly. And however innocent that may be now, was revolutionary back then. And it has made for the music we have nowadays. That's why, as we end this, 1956, Roy Orbison, again, see, these names Roy just Orbison, come up, starting in 56, with his music. There's so many artists started, and it's just like when the Beatles broke in 64, you were going like, where were these bands? All there's something coming out of the woodwork. Well, they were always there. Like Roy Orbison and Johnny Cash and Carl Perkins and Little Richard and Chuck Berry, they were always there playing music. Just nobody wanted to hear them. But when Elvis broke, it was like, we need a new Elvis. We got to jump on the rock and roll bandwagon. And so then all these guys that were playing around clubs but weren't, just had their little following of their kids and stuff like that. Then that's when they came out of the woodwork and took over. Just like it happened with grunge, like we're going to talk about, and with the British Invasion, like we're going to talk about. These bands didn't just come over in 64 to America and form in 1 month and then head over there. They were playing music in 62 and 63. It just wasn't their time yet. And it took the Beatles to do it, just like it took Elvis. Elvis was the linchpin. If there was no Elvis, I'm telling you, it could have been a couple of years, at least. The guy who could have done it was Jerry Lee Lewis. But Jerry Lee Lewis was dangerous as fuck, as you know. Jerry Lee Lewis, first of all, Elvis has wasn't called the king back then, but Elvis was like, he had nice names and stuff like that, like nicknames. What was Jerry Lewis's nickname? The killer. Mm-hmm. Like he could have done it musically, but I don't know if he could have done it like Elvis, because he was way too dangerous for the American public back then. Way too dangerous. And there's other reasons why Carl Perkins was about as talented as you could get, but he wasn't photogenic, and he was inconsistent, even though he was great. It had to be Elvis. It had to be I'm not gonna offend people, like the Messiah, the guy who came down and said, this is rock and roll, and I'm here to present it, and here we go. And to end it, that was 1956. I don't know if I presented it well, but it's the beginning. So there's not a lot to talk about other than the musicians and the songs, Heartbreak Hotel. There's like 15 songs by Elvis in 1956 alone. It seems like, you got Heartbreak Hotel and God, there's so many songs. But that is the beginning. Next time when we do this, we will talk about the next biggest year in rock and roll history, which was of course 1964, which was Beatlemania and the British Invasion, which saved rock and roll again. Everything after 1956, the years that we're going to, and I mentioned this when I announced this, is about saving rock and roll. And in the early 60s, of course, all the the rockers, Buddy Holly was dead, and Elvis was in the arm, and he came back a little bit different. who wasn't as much of the rebel as he was, and Jerry Lee Lewis wasn't being played because of the troubles he was in, and Chuck Berry was in jail. It was just terrible. And then all the pop singers like Fabian and Frankie Avalon were taken over, and it was all clean and homogenized pop for a good long time, and people were saying that rock and roll is dead, and then boom, just like that, whenever somebody says and really means it that rock and roll is dead, always comes an artist or a group that just says, nope, sorry.
That's tough to do.
Yep.
Rock and roll stuff.
So I hope you like it. If you don't like it, then we might not do all of it. We only have four or five. I can't remember how many segments we have. We have 74 and, not 74, 64 and 77 and 82, 81 with MTV. And I think that's about it.
I think grunge in the 90s.
Oh, and Grunge in the 90s, yes, 92. So there's about five more. Oh. So, and
that sums up popular music in the second half of the 20th century.
It does. It shows the most important years of the 20th century for rock and roll. And then when we come to the year 2000, we have to stop because there's been no important
years,
unfortunately.
Yeah.
There are bands out there playing. There are bands out there giving their heart and soul. They're not being heard on the mainstream radio. No,
I think you were mentioning a few weeks back when you had gone to see that collection of bands playing, and you would say, you know, there's no place for new acts to play
anymore. No, there's no place for new acts. They have to play underground like they did before to a bunch of kids, and there's nothing wrong with that. I support those bands and those artists so much, and I know that there will be a band like Nirvana, like the Beatles.
I support them in spirit.
But like Elvis, that will come.
Financial to offer them. So
I know. We do. And I know that at some time, I don't know if it's going to be next year, I don't know if it's going to be 5 years from now, but there will be a band like Nirvana, like Pearl Jam, like all those bands that we talk about that saved rock and roll that will do it again. And it will bring it back into the consciousness. And I think
it's going to be eliminated this time for good.
And if it gets eliminated, we still got like 75 years of rock and roll. So,
yeah.
Now we're going to get to our album.
The album.
Do I have my album? Oh, yeah.
You got your album.
I got my album. Today's album we are going to review as we continue our look at glam rock of the 1970s is by the English band T-Rex from 1971. It was released called Electric Warrior. Not Eclectic Warrior, as Rob thought.
Eclectic Warrior.
That is a warrior that likes to read a lot of books.
Yeah, and it's really hard to find on the computer.
Eclectic Warrior. That's a warrior that likes to do a whole bunch of stuff.
I'm seeing a lot of stuff, but nothing musical.
Now, what's interesting about T-Rex in general, which I want to do a little bit about. It's funny because I don't remember when we did the Slider album doing much of a biography on T-Rex for some reason. I don't remember doing it. But I just want to say about Electric Warrior, it's actually probably came out a year before Ziggy Stardust. And it would have to be called, in my estimation, the first glam rock album, I think. And it was along with Ziggy Stardust, it was the biggest one, for sure. When people talk about glam rock nowadays, they go back to Electric Warrior and Ziggy Stardust. And that's why it's bookending our show. We started with Ziggy Stardust, and I deliberately bookended it with Electric Warrior because those, if you had to condense it to two albums, glam rock, it would be those two. I also want to say, in case I forget, I've really enjoyed these last 4 weeks. We have praised all three albums before that we have done, and I have been pleasantly surprised by all three albums. It's very rare that we tackle any theme where we just really love the albums that we do. And it's one of the few themes that I've done, that we've done. At least I'm talking for me personally.
This is one where they're pretty much all the albums I was looking forward to listening to them the next time. And so.
And it's the one theme that, even though this is our fourth episode, I could do another one or two because the albums have been that good and the music has been that good that if we had to, I wouldn't go, oh, but let's move on because we've kind of exhausted. I'm not at the exhaustion point. I'm like, you know, we could have done another one or two. It's the only time I've ever done that. It has been invigorating. And you know why? The one big reason before we go on to T-Rex is that the music sounds vital and as alive as when it was recorded. And that's why glam rock is such a great music form in general. So anyways, Mark Bolan, he started really being a Dylan fan, like almost everybody was in the early 60s and middle 60s. And then to really kind of get through this, because again, we're running a little bit long.
It's the fault of time.
It's we have no control over time.
Our show is good. It's the right length. But time is wrong.
Father time is always against us.
What an ass.
It's getting cold in here too, so we have to hurry up. It's that time of the year when, you know, the longer we have the heat shut off, the colder it gets at the
end. Oh, the Overlook Hotel is a miserable, miserable place.
Mark Bolan was in a band called John's Children. The band adopted a very strange stage manner resembling the performance of traditional Indian music. Didn't know that. I knew about the band John's Children, but I didn't know it. Anyways, after that, Mark Bolan, who played acoustic guitar, joined up with is it Steve Took? Steve Took on bongos and assorted percussion. And that's the great thing about, oh yeah, Steve Peregrine Took. That's the name in the 60s where you had to have like a really cool name, like, oh my, no, my name is not Steve Took anymore. It's Steve Peregrine Took. Okay. And you also had that time in the 60s. I love music like when it was so adventurous. It's not all that adventurous anymore. But when you could like just have an acoustic guitar and bongos. And you had a band and a chorus, sort of percussion, and you could get a record contract, and it was actually sell to a lot of people, which you can't nowadays. You can do that, but it's just going to sell to, like, you know, your core audience who likes to see you live and shit like that, because there's so many bands. Nothing wrong with having a bunch of bands, though. And they would play children's instruments, too. And so they were very hippy-dippy. They had a very big hippie underground scene. They had these mystical lyrics by Mark Bolan and, you know, unicorns and stuff like that. And so, but they also had one thing that was extremely key when they started. And by the way, the band started not as T-Rex, but when they were acoustic, they were Tyrannosaurus Rex. When they started recording their early albums, they were produced by the great Tony Visconti, who would end up doing so many David Bowie albums and revolutionizing production and music with David Bowie. And so they had a very, really good producer in back of them. And I'm going to just name their first couple of albums, because I got to see this. I've actually heard their first three albums, and they're very hippy-dippy. Not actually my cup of tea, but they're interesting, and that's all. Sometimes that's all you can ask for. I hate albums that are bad and boring, but albums that are not too good but are interesting.
They're still interesting.
And there were some people at the time, a lot of people at the time, who would not switch over to T-Rex and their electric music. That they would say, "That's it. I just like their acoustic stuff." So
they've traveled in a direction I don't like anymore.
Exactly, which has happened, of course, all through music. When somebody changes their direction, all of a sudden they don't follow that artist anymore, and that's fine. That's up to them.
Yep.
So their first album, which was released in July of 1968, was called, and I quote, "My people were fair and had sky in their hair." But now they're content to wear stars on their brows. Now, if that ain't hippy-dippy. And actually, it is very interesting music. It is. Again, it's not my cup of tea. It might have been if I was an 18-year-old in the late 60s.
And really high.
But it wasn't. They followed that album up with Prophets, Seers, and Sages. Mm-hmm. The Angels of the Ages. I for some reason, I really like that, because it's like saying, you know, screw you. We're going to call her out whatever the hell we want it. And yeah, and then the album after that was called, what's just called Unicorn. See, after all those words, they just decide to call
it. Yeah, we're tired of words.
We're tired of
words. Just give it one word there. There, it's done. It's identified.
Man, they're charging us a lot to put those words on an album cover. So their third album released in 69 was called A Unicorn. And then their last album as Tyrannosaurus Rex and as a psychedelic folk band was called A Beard of Stars, which is, doesn't sound complicated, but when you think about it, it's a pretty freaky title. A Beard of Stars. Anyways, they're not bad albums, and they're worth listening to if you're into that kind of hippy-dippy stuff. But then they weren't selling many records, and Mark Bolan really wanted to get out there and get his music heard, and rock and roll was the way to do it. And he was kind of a rocker anyways. Kind of like how Dylan started as a folk musician, but Dylan was into rock and roll before he was into folk. This is kind of like the same thing. So they recorded their eponymous first album, T-Rex, in 1970, which had a hit single with Ride a White Swan, but it didn't really grab everybody. It was good. Some say an excellent album, but it wasn't the album that put them over, and it wasn't the album, either commercially or critically, even though it was a good album. And then it was time for 1971 and this album, Electric Warrior. And this time they came out not only with the electric guitars, but with the costumes and the makeup and everything and the glam look. And it became what glam would be. They really were glam. They were the band even before Bowie. And so that moves us to reviewing the album, I guess.
I don't see why not.
I could go into the prehistory of Tyrannosaurus Rex and T-Rex and get really into it, but I'm not, because that's not really what we're talking about. It's just important to remember they started off as a psychedelic acoustic band, and for four albums, and then they turned into an electric band. Now, it's important to remember that it was a band, but Mark Bolan wrote all the songs, and he was the leader. He decided, so it could have been Mark Bolan and T-Rex. It really could have been. I dare anybody to name anybody else in T-Rex, because even I have trouble with that. I think Mickey Finn, actually. The name Mickey Finn comes to mind. I wanted to get rid of that one.
Tabs?
Yeah.
Too many tabs.
Rob knows what I'm talking about. I'm just going to name, let's see how it is. Oh, yeah, Mickey Finn. Mark Bolan on vocals and guitar. Mickey Finn. See, I remember everything when it comes to rock and roll in the 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s. And played congos and bongos. He still kept that. You know, he still kept that congos, bongos percussion thing. Steve Curry on bass and Bill Legend on drums. The only person I can remember, and really the only person who seemed to have any sort of voice other than Mark Bolan and T-Rex, was Mickey Finn. Also on this album, interestingly, we had Flo and Eddie doing background vocals, which is neat.
On this one again?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, we have Rick Wakeman doing keyboards on the on the Smash, Get It On, Bang A Gong, and Get It On, Bang A Gong Again. And we have Ian McDonald from King Crimson on saxophone and later on with Foreigner. We have Roy Thomas Baker as an engineer, wow, who of course made his Queen bones or his legend with Queen and Cars and whatever. So you had a lot of important people working on this album. And one of the main things about Electric Warrior was that Mark Bolan was really, he was in the zone, man. He wrote all the songs, and he was just in the zone. It's just like it seemed like he could do no wrong. I got this album. This was the second T-Rex album that I had. My brother bought the Slider first, and the Slider was a kind of a, as I talked about, we reviewed the Slider. We both really liked it a lot. We both gave it 4 stars.
Yeah,
It was a very fun album. I liked the album a lot. Kind of scared me a little bit. Oh, the cover scared me because he was all had the black and white and the frizzy hair, and he looked kind of like the girl in the Black Sabbath one. So like an evil ghost to me. So that always scared me, that album. I was young. I was fucking young. like 13 or 12 or something like that. And then my brother bought this album. And I was already like, I really liked the slide rock. But then he bought this. And I just listened to Electric Warrior over and over again. And the amazing thing about this album, as I listen to it now as an adult, is how steeped in 50s rock and roll it is. It's steeped in the form of 60s rock and roll. It's 50s rock and roll, a lot of these songs with 70s glam and rock and roll distortion guitars. If you wanna decimate it with and break it down like that, which I don't like to do, but it's quite evident now as an adult that what it was. All I knew when I heard it when I was young was all of these songs were incredibly catchy to me, every single one, and they had confidence and attitude just brimming off this album. Like everything he says was just like when he says, I forget what song it is because he doesn't, oh fuck, sorry I swore. Give me a little but when he says, oh, Jeepster. I love Jeepster.
Jeepster.
I'm a Jeepster for you. And then at the end, I just love with all, he has so much freaking attitude. And he goes, I'm a vampire for your love. And I'm going to suck you. And I just, that was the last thing he said. And he just put it in at the end. And I thought, there's so much balls to this record. There's so much confidence. There's so much, I know what I'm doing. I know exactly what I'm doing. And I got that Elvis attitude. You know, that Elvis attitude that we talked about, what we just talked about with Elvis, where you're just in the zone and it's like you got so much cocky attitude, but it's good cocky attitude because you know your songs are fucking great. And you know you got rock and roll behind you now instead of acoustic guitars. And you can feel every single second of that. And everything he sings on this record, Mark Bolan, resonates with me because it resonates of, I know what I'm doing. And I may not capture this again. Exactly, the confidence. I know what I'm doing and it may not be the same again. I may not have it, but right now I've got killer songs. I got 11 killer fucking songs, man. And everything he sings on this record, no matter what it is, like I was saying before, even when he sings something as like a mumbo son, he sings with such joy, but also confidence. I was dancing when I was 12. There's something about how he's singing. I'm not making this up. There's something that he knows that nobody else knows.
This is the same thing with the slider, where it's like I'm listening to this and mechanically, or the putting together the parts, it's all right. It shouldn't be as good as it actually sounds, but it's better than. It's really good, and it shouldn't be.
And it has what we call what the slider has. It has, and of course, you don't really care about this when you're young, like when I was 12, too much. But it has lyrics that are kind of like maybe wouldn't, as an adult, wouldn't attract you.
Yes.
They're kind of a little bit.
I call them.
Glammy, science fiction, whatever you want to call it. Oblique.
Cosmic hippie fantasy.
Yes, they're very cosmic. One of the songs is called Cosmic Dancer. One of my favorites of. I love every song in this album, but Cosmic Dancer is just.
You know, I couldn't pin down any exact meaning. When I heard a line, it was like if I tried to assign a meaning to it, the next line he sung would take that right away from me.
That's why, that's such a good point, Rob, because the point is not the words. Even though the words are good, they're good for a sentence, but it goes off in different directions. It doesn't tell stories. It tells sentences, if that makes sense. But it's the way he puts it across and the mood that he brings that makes the song make sense. It makes it a whole in your mind anyways.
If you just read it, it may not work as well as if you hear him singing it.
Well, you know, you take an example like Cosmic Dancer and it really only has like one or two or three verses at all.
It's actually simple.
Yes, it's very simple, but they kind of don't make sense. And he says, "I was 12, like you were a girl or boy." And then you realize it doesn't really fucking matter because you get the point. You get the point by the way he's singing and the way he's putting it across. And when he says, forget the line, but singing about in the grave, you know.
In the tomb, danced right into the tomb.
Oh, I danced right in the tomb. And then you're thinking, oh, is he dead now? But you don't take this literally. You don't take these things literally. He could be talking in the past tense, but he could not be. It doesn't matter. It's the way he sings it. He sings it like, I'm in the tomb and fuck you. And I just love it. I rarely hear any record, and it's usually a Mark Bolan record, like with Slider, where there's just so much confidence and there's so much, I know how to sing these songs. These songs, maybe by another singer, won't be very good, but when I do them, and it's true, yeah, when I do them, they're 10 out of 10. And he's right. He's got the cockiness and the confidence that he's exactly right. When he sings a song as simple, both lyrically and musically, as Lean Woman Blues, and yet it still comes across as not just filler, and you're going, This guy's in the zone. Like, he's in the zone.
Yeah, it was one of the ones that stood out as being different from the others, but it was still really cool.
Based around the blues, a very simple blues and very simple lyrics. Like, a lot of these are just repeating his lyrics or verses over and over again.
One, Life's a Gas.
Yeah. And I hope it's going to last.
That was a really simple song, and I almost don't even assign it any meaning, but I know exactly what he's meaning when he sings that song.
I know too. And everybody may have different interpretation, but at least if you come away with it having your own meaning, I know exactly what he means. And then if you say, he's talking about this, he goes, no, he's not talking about that at all. We're both right.
Yes. Yeah.
And that's what good songwriters do, is that they don't, if they're writing obliquely, they want not to just write oblique. They want you to put your own. I know what he's talking about with Jeepsters. It may not be the same as some other guy, or maybe not even five guys that I bring off the street, but we all can associate with it in our own way, and yeah, that's brilliance.
And that's weird to do with lyrics. Yes. Very weird.
Weird lyrics and knowing what to do with them. That is the key to T-Rex. Now, one other point I want to make, other than the incredible Get It On, and I'm telling you, this is the example of what we've just been talking about for the last 7 minutes. Get It On, Bang A Gong is a monster song. But when somebody like Power Station does it, and I'm sorry, there's probably a lot of people who like that version, it just doesn't have anything compared to this version. You can have all the distorted guitars you want and heavy drums. It's not about that. It's about attitude. It's about confidence. It's about cockiness. Yeah. And it's about get it on.
The instrumentation was appropriate, but it was never overbearing anywhere.
Yes, you see, that's what Power Station tried to overbear. They said, we can make this a powerful song by making it loud and rocking. But sometimes you can make something really rocking without turning it up to 10.
Yeah, like listen to the rhythm part he's playing.
It's the way he plays the guitar. It's the way the drums are playing. It's the funky groove. And I definitely got to mention
the drums, the percussion was really prominent, and it was good.
You know, I don't mean to put down the band T-Rex. It's just that they're not known. But as a band, they really back him with everything they got. And even though he may be calling the shots, obviously, when he writes all the songs and everything, he's got a band that knows what he wants and does it perfectly.
It does it perfectly. Like, there's not too any dead spots here. There's the instrumentation, the playing. There's always something interesting happening after a line. Like, it's not just repeat this four times, repeat this four times.
No, that's... I want to expound on that because that's a good point. I've listened to this album since 1979. I don't know. I can't even count. Hundreds of these. Like, literally, because I used to play it all. You don't have a lot of albums when you're a kid. You know, you just don't.
You don't have a lot of history. You have to gain that over years.
But when I listened to it this last week, I had the same feeling. I had the same excitement about it. And one of the things that Rob was mentioning is there's no dead points. This album starts and then it ends and you're thinking, what? Didn't it just start? It's 40 minutes long. It's almost 40 minutes long. And there's absolutely no points where you go, this part's boring. None of this is boring. It hits you like a sledgehammer at the beginning, and then it hits you right at the end, and then it hits you every time in the middle. And I swear, every time in the last 40 years that I've listened to this record, I always go, that's it? And then I realize, oh, that's been 40 minutes. It feels like a 20-minute record. There's no dead spots. This thing is hitting you and grabbing you from the second it starts with its first note until its last note. And that's what stuns me about this record. This record may not be better than Ziggy Stardust, but I swear to God, it's just as good. Okay? It's just, in its own right, it's very different. Even though they're both glam records, they're very different. It shouldn't be compared. But I'm telling you, it's just as good, in my opinion, as far as the impact it gives you. The just the overall feeling is that you've heard a perfect record. Just like I talked about you did with Ziggy Stardust, how it goes from beginning to end, and you go, wow. There wasn't one bum note in that whole thing.
I liked all of these songs.
And if you want to know why punk rock started, punk rock musicians loved Mark Bolan, even though he died in September of 1977, just when punk rock was getting started. Really, it was getting started popularly in, that's not a word, popularity-wise in America and everywhere. All you have to hear is the song Rip Off. Now, if that isn't punk rock, and the attitude on that song, and what a great way to end a record. I wish I had the lyrics with me, but every time he just says, that's a ripoff. And then the music plays like, I swear to God, if a punk rock band would have wrote this in 1977, they would have wrote it just like this, except with a whole bunch of distorted electric guitars. And I got to pick up the lyrics. I'm sorry. Speak for a couple minutes, Rob, because I just want
to... His voice lets you know that everything in the song he was mentioning was a ripoff.
Yes. But
when you tried analyzing the words as to what he was calling a ripoff...
You didn't know what he was mad about.
What? How did you get ripped off by that? It's impossible. There was no exchange here.
And yet, he came off...
He's right.
...as being so pissed off just by the way he said his lyrics... So brilliant, but Robin's so right. It's like if you look at it, it's like, well, you can't get ripped off by that.
It literally doesn't make sense. But when you listen to it, it does make sense.
In the moonlight, run, you're fighting with the night, it's a ripoff. Da, 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 da. Kissing all the slain, I'm bleeding in the rain, it's a ripoff.
What the
That's
hell?
That's more poetry than getting ripped off. It is like kissing all the slain, I'm bleeding in the rain. Like, that doesn't mean, that doesn't, I don't know what that means.
Metaphor, but for what?
But I'm still pissed off because he just sells it 100%. And the music, like, rocking in the nude, I'm feeling such a dude. Doesn't make sense at all. But you know what? It's a ripoff. If that ain't rock and roll, if that ain't punk rock, 5 years, 6 years before punk rock started, I don't know what is. And I've heard the Stooges and I've heard the New York Dolls and I love them. Rob knows I love the Stooges, but that's as punk rock as anything that Iggy and the Stooges did. And it was such a ripoff. And you're just going, yeah, it is. You just get caught up in everything Mark Bolan says, even if it makes Abba see your baby stud sliding in my mud. That's a ripoff.
He has some strange magic.
Yes, as ELO would say, he does. There is magic in this album. Why would I listen to it 40 years later and still feel the same way? When I was a kid and I'm 12 years old and I heard like Rip Off, I was like, yeah, fuck everybody. You know what? And I put my own words in there. It didn't matter that he was putting these great poetry lyrics in that didn't mean anything as far as Rip Off was concerned. But it was like, I just bought candy and I got 10 cents... gypped, that's a fucking ripoff. And it's just like, it just, I think sometimes we can't put into words greatness in some records. And I think I'm failing now.
Yeah.
We're trying.
This is
but sometimes records can't be talked about. We're trying our best to exemplify what is almost...
By my standards,
unspeakable.
I should not like this album. By my standards,
you said that with Slider too.
Yes,
you said, you know what, and I agree with you.
No right to sound as good as it does.
If I saw lyrics like that before I heard the album on both those, I would say I'm not going to like this album. It's not my cup of tea. And yet he sells me and wins me over 100% on both those albums. And yep. I'm going, I don't know how he did it. He did it with the music. He did it with obviously his incredible vocals, his incredible diction, his incredible cockiness in being in the song 100%. And I bought both of them 100%. I bought them, like what he was saying, I transposed it to what I needed to, I felt that the song was. I can't tell you how many times I played it. I can't tell you how many times my brother played Electric Warrior in the Slider. But especially Electric Warrior. That was the album. Slider is an excellent album. It's not a classic. This one is a bona fide, I'm taking to my grave classic. Was number 97, I think it was 97, in the very first Rolling Stone poll done on their 20th anniversary issue in 1987. They did a poll of the best 20 records, or the best 100 records of the last 20 years, which was 1967 to 87 when they existed. And this album was up there in the top 100. That's pretty big. Like, you're talking about, that's when records were records, 67, 87, right? That's when.
Yeah, when they were vinyl things with the big covers.
And they meant them to be records. It was about that 1966, 67 was when that started. You couldn't have, unfortunately, Revolver or Pet Sounds on there. But basically, you're talking about all the records that were real momentous records. And they got on there. And they do get on, you know, Electric Warrior does get on, like, the greatest albums of all time. I don't have a list for this one, unfortunately. Couldn't find any. I know it has. I've seen them. But, yeah, this is as perfect a record as I had. My brother played it all the time. I played it all the time. You can't get too much better than me and my brother playing a record, just like we played Ziggy Stardust all the time together. Like, for us to like a record at the same time that much was pretty rare, because we had similar tastes, but we also were very individual people. So I give it 5 out of 5. I think it's one of the greatest records ever made. I really do. It's definitely, along with Ziggy Stardust, the greatest glam record ever made.
I give it a 4.5 currently, but it's still growing on me.
See, I've had the pleasure of listening to it 100 times. First time listening to it,
I knew about that. I'd heard Jeepster and Bang a Gong on the radio years ago. But after listening to this, Cosmic Dancer and Life's a Gas were the two that were I was singing when I was at work.
I can't. There are some things, like Rob knows, I couldn't get Mambo Sun out of my head. That's why we were preparing for the show today. And sometimes it's Cosmic Dancer. Like, when you hear this album, even if it's once, especially twice, if you hear it in a week, I bet you you're going to hear 4 or 5 songs in your head at least. And it's going to be Cosmic Dancer, because I was dancing when I was 12. There's something about it that just permeates your head. Jeepster.
Life's a Gas. Well, that riff right after.
I know. Just great. Just what we were saying.
What about a heavy sound. There's nothing light and gassy and airy about that sound being played. It's a heavy sound.
And there's
sound.
Not a second wasted, like you said. Everything. There's not like a pause while that happens. He has to put in a
The drums are doing something neat, or there's some like in Cosmic Dancer, the strings were really huge.
They were just like in Rip Off, how the album actually ends on strings to punk rock almost.
They have that like 30 seconds of is this song still going on?
And it works, and somehow it works, even though it's a very punk rock type song. It's like those. It sounds like a ripoff, like you're getting ripped off, the strings, because they're very distorted. And I want to go back to what you said about Life's a Gas, about how it's kind of a hokey thing to say when you see it, Life's a Gas. But when he sings it,
it
almost becomes a really cool thing to say.
He is lamenting lost love, and a big one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it all of a sudden, Life's a Gas, the phrase becomes pretty cool. And it only takes one listen, and you realize that's not hokey, not the way he's singing it, not the way their lyrics are going. And wow. Anyways, you gave it 4.5.
Yeah, yeah, that's from
and that's just because
lack of familiarity. Lack of familiarity. Yeah, this week was the first time I ever listened to it.
See, yeah. Two T-Rex records in 1 year, and I picked the best ones, but obviously, because you don't want to represent the worst of a band. I don't know. Unfortunately, my brother and I kind of got stuck on those two records, then we never really listened to too much T-Rex after that. We just loved those records so much, we just kept playing them. I don't know much about T-Rex after Slider, so even I can't tell you too much what it was like. But to see you hear something like that and go, I like this band. Everybody's known of them, but I've never really heard them. And just to, I say, I really like them, makes it just worth doing the shows, because you just always want to turn people onto good music or what you think is good music. And this is great music. T-Rex is great. Mark Bolan is just phenomenal, at least in his prime. And when you can have somebody else kind of say, yeah, they are.
There's times when I've written off music without giving it a really good listen because of the style, because of the outside of music style, the actual glam. You know, looking at them, I think, well, that's not for me, this kind of...
Yeah,
they're
exactly.
Concentrating too much on the look, and they can't possibly be concentrating on the music. I did that with Kiss as well. Didn't realize how good they were.
Yeah, good point. I bet you they're not concentrating on music. Yes, that's a good point, yeah.
Like, yeah, but boy, they were good musicians, yeah. And that surprised
you
me.
You know what? And everybody's guilty
of that. I was associated
with
them with a show, with the makeup and the fire. And
everybody is guilty of that in some way or another with some artist of pre-imposing their own thoughts before hearing it.
Oh.
And but if the music's good, then it will change those opinions.
Yeah, it transcends the...
Yeah, it does. And I love when music... I have to look at the list and everything, but it has happened a couple times on this show. I just can't remember it at the moment. I'm sorry, I can't. But there are a couple of times when I thought, this is going to be a stinker. I don't like the way this band looks. I don't like their name. And then it's like, holy fuck, what a great album. And... that makes it all worthwhile. It just surprises, because when you get to our age and you've heard so much music, you still get that feeling you can't be surprised anymore. And yet we constantly get surprised.
They got nothing, but they got lots. They got
that's
plenty.
The great thing about not only about music, which is phenomenal, greatest artistic thing that's ever been invented in my estimation, but rock and roll itself is that the great bands sometimes, and the things that stick with you, maybe a band that very few people have heard of, maybe a band from the early 70s that not only sold a couple of thousand copies, but it's out there waiting, and you're always waiting for that surprise of that one band that goes, wow, I've never heard anything like that before. And that's what that's why we do what we do, is because we want to be surprised. We don't want to come here listening to all these records beforehand and say, oh, well, I know that. But I haven't heard Electric Warrior in a long time. So when I picked I had to pick Electric Warrior for glam. And I said, I know this, I kind of know this album inside and out. And then I listened to it and it sounds 100% fresh. It's like the first time I listened to it. And that's rock and roll. You know, when you can mix, and all these albums that we've done in glam rock all sound like they could have been released 15 years ago. And they don't date almost anything as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
And they're so fresh, they're so energetic. We did this. I'm so glad we gave 4 weeks to it too, you know.
I can kind of pin this to the electric era of music, but beyond that,
it could show up anywhere. It is true, though. It is true, the electric era of music, yeah. We have to end the show because we don't
want... Okay, let's stop the show.
We seriously don't want any more longest shows ever. We want to keep Blue Oyster Cult as the long... Not out of any favoritism, but because... If it gets any longer than Blue Oyster Cult, we have seriously done too long a show.
We accept that we're going to go over an hour every time.
Just accept it. Well, that's our show for this
week.
That's
it. I've had enough of this.
That's enough. We've talked too
much. Let's get out of here.
I'm losing my voice already. Next week.
Cut into my drinking time.
Next week, Christmas special.
Christmas.
Lots of fun. Drunkenness.
Presents.
Well, no presents. I didn't get you shit. Remember to be sure. Oh yeah, and Rob will read his a passage from the Bible, which everybody should be prepared for. His favorite passage from the Bible.
But which Bible?
That, of course, his own written soliloquy about about how Christmas means, what it means to him in his heart.
Feelings and such.
Warm. Getting into warm feelings.
Warm feelings of love and family. And so be sure to listen next week. Until then, take care. And as always, stay safe.